Hi, and welcome to The Art of Relating, episode 19. I'm your host, Zach Schwartz. I'm a psychologist out there in the world, but I don't do counseling or therapy over the radio. We're just learning a system together through these shows in The Art of Relating that are effective humanistic interaction skills. Remember, you can write in with questions or comments to Zach@kepw.org. Or you can visit the website at dyingskills.com for more books, podcasts of these shows, information, etc. Remember, practice and integration is what matters in these skills. Hearing them and agreeing with them is the easy part. So you got to practice and have multiple ways to take it in, which is why today, after we ground, I'm going to have a guest for the first time. And I'll introduce her, but as in most things, we say ground first. So set your bottom half, attach to the earth, open your joints, relax your knees and hips, connect yourself to the ground. And then the top half of your body, relaxed but hold a shape that says, I'm worth something, I have some confidence. I feel up or energetic. Let your body talk to your mind. And then breathe at least two grounding breaths. Remember, bottom to top. Feel your stomach, feel your chest. And let it all go. A couple of those. And then shake out the kinks. That's number four. I'm going quick, but we do this every week. And then finally, self-talk. In your brain, you hear those pieces of self-talk that we recommend are relax, affirm, unhook. So take it easy, chill out, I'm a good person, I'm doing the best I can. It's all small, I'm just a speck living on a speck. Let everything shrink. Find your, what I call your Obi-Wan self, your internal resource, the part of you that's billions of years old. He or she is in there. And then when you feel centered, grounded, then we can begin. So, as I've said before, the most complex things you do in a day, I would argue, are to interact with another person, hooking up those 200 trillion cell biocomputers and getting something harmonic to happen is a real art. So, lots of different ways to look at it, and for the last 6 months, say, it's only been me talking at you. So today, I have a guest who also does a lot of relationship work and communication work. And she's a therapist here in town, a licensed clinical social worker in private practice named Erica Freeman. Very busy, very well thought of, and like I say, does a lot of this kind of communication. So I'm going to turn the mic over to her, and she will take it from there, share some of her perspective, share some things that will help us relate, hopefully, more effectively.
Okay, so as he said, I'm Erica Freeman, licensed clinical social worker, and I am in private practice in Eugene, and you can find me on Psychology Today under Erica Freeman, LCSW. I offer a group therapy Monday afternoons for people who are struggling with depression, anxiety, and or bipolar disorder, and that group teaches people skills to help them manage their struggles more effectively and helps them be more independent. And we also do a lot of skills around relating and with ourselves and with others to help us be more effective in the world of relating, both with ourselves and with others. I also offer a blog, and the blog is Erica L. Hernandez, that's my married name, .com. So Erica with a C, Hernandez with a Z, Erica L. Hernandez.com. And on my blog, I also talk about natural ways to help people more effectively manage depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder. I also talk about coping with grief and loss and the interesting interplay between spiritual experiences after the loss of a loved one. So you might find some of that interesting on that blog. So when it comes to my perspective on the art of relating, as Zach calls it, I really look at that like a puzzle. And I think of it as there are many pieces and parts. And when you put all those pieces together, you end up with a beautiful picture that makes taking care of oneself and relating with others much more effective. And so I'm going to start with each major part. I'm going to break that into smaller parts. So one of the major parts of relating is how I relate with myself. And so I'm going to first talk about how I relate with myself, because how I take care of myself and relate with myself has a direct impact on how I relate with other people. So, for example, there are a number of things that I try to help people learn that I think are really important about taking care of oneself. And they're really basic, simple things, but they have a huge impact on people. The first one is exercise. We find in the research and in our daily lives that if we exercise, we feel better. And I often help people try to develop a plan of beginning to exercise or finding something that they like to do that they can do. And the research shows actually that if we exercise an average of 45 minutes a day, the brain grows. Literally, the neurons in the brain grow. It's amazing. It even happens when we're 60 and older. So those of you older listeners out there, you don't have to worry about the brain shrinking in old age. You can get out there and walk and it will grow. And it's amazing. I had a client in my office today who's been coming in for, 6 weeks maybe, and has been very depressed. He had a stroke and has been struggling a great deal with his depression. And finally, this last week, he pushed himself. Before that, he was walking maybe 10, 15 minutes a couple times a week. This last week, he got out there and he walked 5 times, 35 to 45 minutes, and he said it was so hard. He had to force himself the whole way. And yet, when he came back to see me today, he said he felt so much better. Wow, 5 days, and he was already feeling better. And I believe that it was related to walking. Zach talked at the very beginning of the hour about grounding and another word for meditation. And that's another thing that I find to be crucially important about how we take care of ourselves, is to find a time of day and a way that we feel comfortable meditating. And I encourage all my clients to do it. It's something that I do 2 and 3 times a day. And I notice when I do it regularly, it helps. The research supports that meditating reduces pain, it reduces anxiety, it improves mood. And people who meditate an average of 1 hour a day in the later years in their life don't get dementia. So much easier to relate with people if our minds are clear and sound, and meditating helps that. Zach has something to say.
So this is great stuff, and we're talking a lot about self-care, and we have talked before on this show about the right to self-care. It's one of your 5 interpersonal rights. We've talked about ground, process, and content being the order of things in an interaction, and ground is between me and me. And process is between me and you, and content is between us and the item, and that's the order of things. So all these things I do, and remember, the last part is, I don't control what I get. I only control what I bring, and what I bring to an interaction certainly affects the interaction. It doesn't totally guarantee anything, but when I bring good stuff, I get better stuff in general. So all this about self-care really matters, and it's really the first step.
Okay, so continuing on that realm, we also find that our nutrition has a big impact on how we feel, and anything that impacts how we feel impacts how we relate to other people. And obviously, Zach and I are on the same plane here, with maybe different wording. And it's remarkable to me how much more research there has been recently out in the world on how nutrition impacts mood. So, you know, whole grains, plenty of protein, plenty of fruits and vegetables, all these things really impact how we feel and how we relate to others. And making sure we eat regularly. There's plenty of research out there that shows if we miss a meal, we feel worse. And so, you know, just getting the 3 meals a day in. It's amazing how many people I have come in to work with me and they don't eat all day long. And then they go through this binging in the evening and they feel terrible and their weight fluctuates and it has a really negative impact. And just eating regularly and eating good food can have a huge impact on mood as well.
God, I know that feeling.
Yeah, me too.
Skipping meals and binging.
skipping meals and feeling strange.
Oh, God.
Having a harder time relating to people. Yeah, so, you know, what we eat, what we take into our temple impacts what we put out of our temple, whether it's, you know, relating to other people or how we take care of ourselves, makes a big difference. Another thing that is really impactful is having a healthy rhythm about our lives. It was really funny on the way to work today. I dropped my 11-year-old off at school, and she was doing some kind of quiz about you know, how many of these things you have to have, at least three of them to be healthy, and one of them was having a good rhythm, getting up at about the same time, going to bed at about the same time, eating at about the same time, sleeping about the same time each night. These things really make a difference. My son had interesting homework that talked about a loss of sleep one night can kill brain cells. Depression can kill brain cells. Anxiety can kill brain cells. Mania can kill brain cells. Walking and meditating makes them grow. So let's make sure we get enough sleep at night too. And then let's think about how we think. What kinds of thoughts we have. Because if I'm thinking that you're a crappy person, I'm probably going to say nasty things to you. And if I'm thinking that you're a good person, I'm probably going to be more likely to have positive things to say to you, and I'm probably going to have better energy in your company. So it's really helpful to think about how we think and whether we're having positive thoughts or negative thoughts, because those impact our relationships and ourselves. And the last piece of the puzzle, the portion of the puzzle that's about how I take care of myself, is whether I have any spiritual anything. And that could just be maybe I sit with a tree or I watch the squirrels, you know, or maybe it means I go to church. There's lots of different ways to be spiritual, but having some kind of connection to something bigger than myself, that speck idea, right, that can really help. So that piece is important. And it's just as important how the other person that I'm going to be interacting with, it's just as important that they do all those things for themselves. So how I do it and how they do it is going to impact how we do it together. So then if I look at the puzzle pieces around how I interact with other people, I have to think about how I communicate, what kind of words I use. Am I talking about everything or am I talking about this thing? They talk about nonviolent communication, and when I talk about nonviolent communication, what that means is that I'm going to start out by saying something I like about you. I'm going to say something positive about you before I expect you to listen to something I don't like, because you're more likely to not get defensive, and you're more likely to open up your ears and be ready to hear what I have to say if I start with something positive. And then if I focus on how I feel about one thing I didn't like that you did, it's much more likely that you're going to be able to listen to me. Whereas if I talk about all the 100,000 times you did this horrible thing, you're going to tune me out and not want to hear what I have to say. Because of course you didn't do it 100,000 times. You only did it 900 times. So there's going to be a debate there. But if I talk about one time and it was yesterday and it was at dinner time, then I'm being specific and you're more likely to be able to listen. So communicating with that regard, and also being ready to admit my part. You know, maybe I didn't communicate well in advance, or maybe I expected too much, or whatever it was. So being able to admit my part.
And I noticed that people use language differently, and I think you just made a point about that, and I didn't want it to get lost. Mm-hmm. That some people, for example, will say, this happened 3 years ago, and they mean the year 2015. Mm-hmm. Some people say this happened 3 years ago, and they mean a while. So noticing how you use language and how the other person uses language really helps to communicate more clearly or understand them better. And I love that part about starting with something positive and keeping your criticism or issues you may raise small and specific.
Right, right. It's really crucial. Absolutely. So once we've dealt with that, there's going to be times when stress rises. And I know that Zach has talked to you about taking space. And when the stress rises in an interaction, it's a really good idea to recognize it and to be able to have some kind of agreement with the person you're talking to that, you know, that if we start getting stressed, if we start rising, if we start escalating, we're going to take some space. And space is really helpful, but if we don't have some kind of agreement about what space is going to look like, it can cause as much trouble as it starts. And I have had a couple in my office not long ago talking about having a conflict. And one of them said, I need to go home, and they went home, and the other person had no idea when they were going to talk again. And it went on for a day or more before they talked, and the whole time the person who was left was stressed and worried. You know, is this the end of the relationship? Are we ever going to talk again? And so if we have an agreement that it's going to be 20 minutes or it's going to be 36 hours or it's going to be a week, but we are going to then get back together at this place and we're going to talk about this thing again, then there's less stress around it.
So remember, every right carries an obligation. That's like philosophy 101.
Right.
So the right to space, the right to pause, the right to go to a neutral corner carries actually a dual obligation. One is to give space when it's asked for, and the other is to return and resolve. And that's what Erica was just talking about.
Right.
If I know how long or under what conditions are we getting back together, if I assure the person that this is not me ending the discussion, this is not me walking out on you, this is me pausing,
right,
I promise I'll be back,
right,
that ends a lot of that worry in,
right,
the person left. They don't feel so abandoned,
exactly,
so shut out.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that reduces the stress and makes it more possible. So on an everyday basis, when whether we're communicating or not having that kind of intense conversation, it's important in relationships to invest, to make time to spend quality time together, to make time to be one-on-one, especially in intimate relationships, and to choose to connect, to in a one moment, to choose to turn towards our partner, to look at them, to acknowledge them, to touch them or hug them. Little things each throughout the day where we choose to share something, we choose to look at them, we choose to hug, we choose to touch. Those things can make a big difference.
And I think one problem with that is that when we first get together, we first fall in love, we're not sharing a budget, we're not sharing house chores, we're not sharing children. It's easy to look at each other and pay attention to,
right,
each other.
Right.
And we sort of take it for granted.
Yeah.
But if we don't watch it as time goes on,
yeah,
there's less time for that, or it happens less often. We have to learn to be conscious of it and make it happen.
Right.
Start having date nights. Start,
right,
having conversation hour.
Right.
What, get a babysitter.
Yeah.
Whatever we got to do.
Choose
to
it.
Keep that connection, mm-hmm, strong.
It's, yeah.
It used to be take no effort.
Right. First couple years,
anybody
maybe.
Anybody can do that.
Right.
But how we do later that matters.
Right. Right. And it's also important to really look at when minor hassles come up that we deal with them, that we don't wait, we don't procrastinate and put them off until they become this major problem. So that's another piece that's important. And I want to go back to the thoughts that I mentioned before when I was talking about how to take care of me. If I'm taking care of my partner by having positive thoughts about them, I'm more likely to have a positive energy around them and more likely to think of something negative they did as part of a bad day rather than part of them being a horrible person. So really important to have those positive thoughts about my partner. And then the other important piece of the puzzle is coming back to the spiritual piece. We don't have to believe in God. We don't have to be part of a church. But we need to find a way to connect with the greater world, whether that's to watch a squirrel, to sit by the river, to meditate, to ground ourselves, to take some time, hopefully each day, but at least each week, to really kind of sit quietly with the world, the greater world, as part of where we are. And so finding a way to connect to it is important.
So that part of me that I call my Obi-Wan self, mm-hmm,
right,
from Star Wars,
yeah.
If I get there, that guy, that Zach, that part of my awareness is always feeling relatively loving and, mm-hmm, happy and at,
mm-hmm,
peace.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's small on this planet. And I love that part of me and bringing that part to an interaction. What I say is only Obi drives. So who decides,
right,
what I say or do, that's up to my Obi-Wan self. But free will, ironically, belongs to the ego. So
right,
my ego has to agree to,
right,
give that power to the spirit.
Right.
Which is all part of connecting in the way you're describing.
Exactly.
So
that can be spirituality. There doesn't have to be a God involved. If you believe in it, great. If you don't, it's that connecting to your deeper self. And nature can really help. So, you know, whether you're going for a walk and just noticing when you get outside, notice the color of the trees. Notice the animals. Notice the squirrels. Notice the birds. You know, notice the sky. Notice the quality of the clouds or the lack thereof. You know, notice how the sun feels if it's out. Notice how the raindrops feel.
And then try and bring that self, if I hear you right,
mm-hmm,
to your interactions.
To your interactions,
that's who you're,
yes,
letting interact with,
right,
your partner.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Yeah, and then the interactions are going to be better. And to do that, we have to take time to get in touch with that part of ourselves. You know, again, whether it's through meditation or whether it's through watching squirrels play. You know, whether it's through, you know, watching your dog play or petting your cat or, you know, whatever it is that you have that helps you connect to that quiet, peaceful, happy place inside yourself. You know, those kinds of things really make a difference in how we interact with other people and what energy we bring to those interactions. You can't see the energy, but you can feel the energy. And everybody around you can feel the energy, even if they're not tuned into it. They can feel it a little bit. So what we do to help ourselves get tuned into that comfortable, happy place can make a big difference in our art of relating.
So how do I, you know, my partner uses language different than I do. She feels different than I do. Her maps of reality are different than mine.
Right.
So how do we untangle all that into a loving, functional relationship? Do you have any tips or ideas?
Yeah, well, you know, it is. It's complicated, and it's maybe more complicated when men and women interact with each other because we come from such different places, right? We've got different hormones. We've got different structures, like you said, different ways of relating. And, you know, if we can practice occasionally, and it can be feel pretty awkward, but if we can actually sit with our partner occasionally, you know, a couple times a week maybe, and just say, okay, let's just sit down and let's practice talking and let's practice paraphrasing what the other guy says. It's amazing how that can help you be aware that when you have a conflict, it's amazing how often that happened because we misunderstood what the other person intended to say. Or we believed.
Right. I never know what you said. I only know what I heard.
Right.
And that's never the same.
Right.
And the only one that knows what you intended to say is you.
Right.
And what you actually said, I'm not sure actually even exists.
Right.
I just know what I heard.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
So there's a lot of checking back and
checking
forth to
back
do.
In.
And to make that a habit or to do it under stress or to do it in an argument, I should be practicing all the time. So it becomes automatically how I speak. Otherwise, I won't use it under stress.
Right. Right. And the thing is, we may not remember to use it under stress. But if we have a time when we're not under stress, that we sit down and we talk and we do it then, it can help smooth over the stressful times because it's supernatural. How many of us, I bet Zach and I would both agree, even though we teach this stuff, even though we read about it, we've studied it, we know a lot about it, when it comes to a stressful interaction with our wives or husbands, how often does it happen? Probably not real often. However, that doesn't mean we can't come together with our husband or wife when we're not under stress and practice it then and helps.
Absolutely. And remember, the skills are applicable unilaterally. When I work with couples and they both learn these skills, great. They can use it all the more. But even if only one of them is there, if they start to practice the use of these skills, it'll still work. Even if their partner never heard of it, even if they don't understand.
Right.
It still works.
It's amazing.
But it takes practice.
It takes practice.
And I tell people for free, you can call me and check on what your homework was. I don't charge by the minute.
right.
And a lot of people go, what was I supposed to do this week?
Yeah, you can
so
text.
Call me and check in and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, taking time to read about something that helps you connect to it. So if you know if you're going on Zach's site at Dine Skills or if you're checking out my blog at ericalhernandez.com, or you decide you want to try out a group where you can work on these skills with other people, you can get in touch with me, Erica Freeman, and you can find my phone number online and get in touch with me and see if being part of a group might help you learn those skills. That's another thing that can help. Again, check out the blog, www.ericalhernandez.com. Erica with a C, Hernandez with a Z.
And remember how we defined a healthy relationship. Two independent people, each taking care of themselves, choose to hang out together. Neither one of them has to. So they each have some material and emotional independence, and they choose to hang out together. And they act out of mutual respect because they each demand that. That's called assertiveness. And they each offer that. That's called consideration. And there's skills for both. So I loved, Erica, thank you so much for with self-care.
Yeah.
And getting yourself set to be in an interaction.
Right.
And I say to clients often as an early homework, I say, whenever anyone initiates a contact with you this week, mm-hmm. and for any reason, always start with, hold on, find center,
uh-huh.
and then check in, yep. hi, what you need.
Yeah.
But get in the habit of doing that. Mm-hmm. So if you're under stress or if you're talking to about mm-hmm. a sensitive issue with mm-hmm. a spouse, say, you might use the skill if yeah. you do it all the
time. If you do it all the time, right.
So create those habits and check in with each other. So I want to ask Erica how, as I have her, because I know we both do this for a living and in our personal lives. So I say to people, I want you to be healthily assertive, and I also want you to be healthily considerate. And remember, all assertion, no consideration, we call that narcissism. It's just one world and it's mine. And the opposite of that, all consideration and no assertiveness, is codependent.
Right.
And so right. often they find each other, a codependent and a narcissist. Mm-hmm. They get along great until mm-hmm. one of them gets healthier.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
right.
for another day. So I'm wondering, while I have Erica here, any tips on how to be healthily assertive or healthily considerate?
Yeah, so a lot of what, you know, I mentioned the group that I run on Monday afternoon from 12:30 to 2, and in that group, I teach people skills to help them feel better, and part of that is we work on our thinking patterns and learning to have more positive thoughts. We spend a whole 4 weeks on learning nonviolent communication, which is about, and there's sections on being assertive and setting boundaries in the group.
So what's an example? How do I be assertive in a healthy way?
Well, it might be something very simple, like saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm not available to talk right now. We can schedule something later.
Uh-huh.
Or, no, I can't lend you a dollar.
Don't have it.
Don't have money, not going to give it. Yeah, right. It's okay to say no.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Certainly. How about consideration? How do you be better at being considerate?
Well, one thing that I've talked about with some clients is helping them understand that if they're too nice and they don't set boundaries, they're not being nice to themselves. So you have to find that balance to be considerate to other people. You have to think of their feelings and your own feelings. So it's part of that is boundary setting. I can be considerate to a point, and then I need to set a boundary so I take care of myself also.
Yeah, it's funny. If I do values clarification with a couple,
mm-hmm.
almost all the time they'll say, we're equals, it's not gender-based, we run the show together.
Right.
But then when they start to interact in real-life situations, those values seem to go out the window.
Right, right, like, right. Yeah.
And even
yeah.
though they
theory
believe
and
that,
practice, yeah.
they immediately start a who's right fight, or they yeah. start trying to control each other.
Right.
Or they start, you know, we're in such a win and lose, such a divisive sort of history
yeah.
that it's really hard to change. How
yeah.
do we be partners? How do we equally validate and care about each mm-hmm. other, even mm-hmm. though we're different?
Right.
And there's a lot of learning involved in that process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So being considerate to myself helps me be considerate to someone else.
Absolutely. I only have that which to share, love, etc., is that which I can generate in my own center.
Mm-hmm.
And so what
right.
I can make, you know, what did the Beazle say? You know, what you the love you take is equal to the love
you make. Right, right. That's right.
And
yeah.
so I can learn by working on me how to have more to share.
Right.
And, you know, Buddha said, if I may paraphrase, the less I need, the better.
Right, right.
And again, mm-hmm. it gives me in a position to bargain more considerately and to work with my partner and what it means to be equal. And especially in today's politics, that seems like essential.
Essential.
So anyway, thank you so much, Erica, for being here. That was great.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And we will see you all again next week on The Art of Relating, Monday night at 7. Until then, be safe, practice the skills, write in with questions or comments. Takes a long time not to understand, but to practice and get in the habit of using these things. So have a great week. Bye, Erica.
Thank you.